that is Leslie M. Scott Jones this morning.
Oh, aren't you precious? Thank you.
Just looking out for our listeners. And speaking of looking out for our listeners, I think we should start the show, as we frequently do, with a parental advisory. At some point in this show, we may say the word armature. Armature.
Ooh, that's a lovely word.
Isn't it? It just...
I like the way that just kind of rolls off your tongue. That's beautiful.
Liquidly, almost seductively, which is why parents should be advised, if you've got those kids and you're locking them away from the harshness of the world, as you should do, then be warned, at some point in the show, we may say the word armature. You've been advised, so you can be more wise.
Look at you. That's just wonderful. Looking out for the children.
I believe they are our future.
We should teach them well and let them lead the way.
Well, let's not get ahead of ourselves now. Because I've seen what the kids are into these days. I don't know if I want them leading all that much. But...
Well, we didn't teach them. That's the problem.
That's so. Look at you. You brought that right back around.
I did.
You are on point. I love the four coffee mornings.
The four coffee morning is being good to you today, isn't it?
It is. All right. Well, let's be good to our listeners, because we have such a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful guest with us right now. Do you want to lay it down? It's Daryl Rose, ladies and gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you, Daryl?
I'm fine. I had a performance across the mountain last night, and I managed to get it together here after 3:30 this morning.
Oh, good gosh, 3:30 this morning.
And arriving, but I'm fine. Thank you for having me this morning.
Oh, so it is our pleasure. So, Daryl, you were, of course, I was going to let you take the lead. Sorry.
Okay, we're fine.
So for those of you who don't know, and if you don't know, you should know.
Oh, my God.
Because Daryl Rose is not just a musician. He is not just an artist. He is a force of nature, ladies and gentlemen. This man has had a career that most of us could only dream of in our wildest imaginations.
Thank you.
And we are so happy that he came to talk with us this morning.
Thank you.
So I first want to talk about your music.
Okay.
So when did you start drumming?
Around, let me see, I was 20 years old, exactly. I was in Nashville, Tennessee, and I think being growing up in a family of church people out of New Orleans in the AME Church in Nashville, Tennessee, the rhythm, that pulse has always been with me. The first time I picked up a drum was I was around 20 years old. I was actually in Norfolk, Virginia, stationed there in the United States Navy, went to a pawn shop and bought a conga drum. And I played it and went across the Atlantic Ocean a couple of times with me on cruises. And I kept playing it and playing it. And then I returned to college, Tennessee State University. It's a long, long, long story here. And I put the drum down once, put it in the closet, put it away. Then I took it out of the closet, played it, then used it to hold a lampshade.
Yes.
And finally, we're here we are today. It came back to me over all the years, but approximately age 20.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So you have played with some of the biggest names in the music business.
It is, yeah, it's amazing.
So what was the most enlightening, the most exciting, the best experience for you of the famous people that you have played with?
Wow, you know, it's so many. I think that I have to, you know, return to the Wailers story, the Bob Marley's band, the Wailers.
Yes.
In the year 1985, I was reading Catch a Fire, and in the middle of the book, there's this black and white photograph of Bob Marley and the Wailers, and kind of in an elevator doorway, and this black and white, huge photo. So that evening, upon going to sleep after reading this, this dream appeared to me, and this energy just appeared in my doorway in my house. this energy in the dream. And I woke up and I was warm and I said, what's going on here? Then I left it alone. In the year 2001, I received 3 phone calls after my Christmas vacation from the Whalers management in Norfolk, Virginia. The Whalers were seeking me out to play with them. Very, very true story.
Oh, my God.
So for 6 years, I am amidst the legends of reggae.
Yes.
Aston Family Man Barrett on bass, Junior Marvin guitar, Al Anderson guitar, Earl Wyland, the original Whalers.
Yeah.
So 6 years. Those are, there's among the amongst the many.
Yeah.
Baba Tunde Olatunji, the great master drummer, the first master to come to America in the year 1944, who I met in the year 1985 in Asheville, North Carolina, and I was his student until he passed in 2002. So I was with Mr. Olatunji for all those years. Taj Mahal,
right.
Great Taj Mahal, amongst the Neville Brothers family members,
right.
Cyril Neville and Charles Neville, Dr. John. And
you've played with all these guys.
Yeah, in bluegrass, we go to Peter Rowan, Tony Rice, Jerry Douglas, Edgar Mayer, the bluegrass masters. About a year off and on with Dave Matthews Band in the early years.
Right.
God, we'll be here for a while. We can keep going if you want me to, you know.
We can list all of them.
Yeah, you know, so I had these moments. Each time is a learning situation for me.
So, I'm afraid to ask this question because I'm afraid that if I ask this question, you'll suddenly say, "Oh, of course," and you'll leave because this is a show about local art, and my thought is, how is it that you're still with us? Like, because this town sees so many artists rise up and develop themselves and then leave and go to you know, bigger cities.
Yeah.
But it's so great and it's so amazing that you're still here. How is that possible?
Well, when I arrived in Charlottesville officially in, I guess, the 1990 in September, I had been well traveled as a road musician for like 13 years with a band called African Dreamland that I, you know, established in Nashville, Tennessee. It was like a blues and reggae fusion band. So we featured blues guitar with bottleneck and slide and yours truly on African hand drums, mainly congas. So as a duet, we added one person to the duet and became a trio, and we toured for a long, very long time. When I crossed After Mountain for the first time in the misty morning, I was like, wow, what's going on here? And here we are today. But I love waking up in Charlottesville. I love the mornings here. That's the best I can explain. And I've played with the best musicians in the world since I've lived here.
Right. And it hasn't stopped you.
Yeah,
living here has not stopped your career.
So I travel in and out. And, right now I teach lots and lots of young people now in African drumming in various schools also in the community.
That's amazing. So how many classes do you have? How many students?
Oh, my
And what are their age ranges? Because I'm, you
so
know.
So can I can give names of schools and everything on the radio?
Of course.
Okay. We'll start on, we have the Field School of Charlottesville, whom I've been affiliated with since its very beginnings. I have students there on Mondays and Wednesdays, so that's about 23. Then I have my Montessori, Mountaintop Montessori students. It's about 22 up there on Thursdays, and then I'll have Yancey Elementary on Mondays. I've got 5 to 10 kids there. Then I'll have the Brownsville Elementary on a rotation through the end of April. We'll probably have about 100 kids before it's over there.
Wow.
And mostly I just, you know, teach the youth right now.
Right.
So, you know, before the year's over, I'll have over 200, I'm sure.
That's
amazing.
We've
been averaging that since about 1991, 92. So we're talking about in the thousands, would you say?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, exactly.
So so one of the things that I really enjoy about this show, because we come from We're writers and we're also theater people. And it's great to talk to other artists in other disciplines and see how the disciplines are alike and also how they're different. One of the things that that strikes me about music is, I mean, I take guitar lessons from someone in town, and he's a professional musician. I mean, he's a hardcore professional musician. And musicians do that. Like they teach. I mean, I remember when Corey Harris first came to town. After a while, I saw like little signs up like "take lessons from Corey Harris," and I thought, "You got to be kidding me!" But it's one of the great things about music is that, I mean, and it's not like this in theater. Like, I can't go to Patrick Stewart, and he's not going to have like a sign up saying for acting lessons.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, well, here we are. Yeah,
I'm not going to not going to go to Sidney Poitier, and he's
exactly. I understand.
Right. Yeah, but it's not. But it, do you see? Is that a difference in music?
I think it depends on the musician. For instance, at this point for me, it's like thoroughness and being more involved with the process of teaching music. African drumming, there are rhythms, but there's theory that is involved. There's time signatures. There's African 6, there's a Latin 6, there's a 4-4, there's a 6-8, and there's turnaround times. So this is all part of the process. So at this point, for me, if someone wants to study, we're going to be thorough. We're going to really get, you know, so you can understand and you can play the instrument in various settings and positions, to quote Miles Davis, playing different positions, you see.
And, okay, I know that a lot of people don't realize that African drum is used in a lot of different music genres.
Exactly.
I mean, bluegrass, country, rock and roll. I mean, it fits in everywhere.
Yeah, and it's not coincidental that you can find it at place.
Yes.
But it has to be as I'm sitting here, you see the circular motion that I'm doing. It's got to be circular. It has to be room.
Yes.
For the conversation to be amongst human beings.
Because that's what it is. That's what drumming
exactly.
in its baseness, it is a conversation.
In New Orleans, if for instance, if you're there with your flute and your guitar, and I'm on stage and I see y'all, I say, come on up, y'all. Did you bring your axe? That's what I ask you. And you come up and play. I'm not going to set up a box to say, oh, well, we're doing this, but I know you can play, but we're doing only this way.
Right.
It needs to be more of that.
Yes.
Sharing experience. And that's where I'm coming from, really. I'm trying to share and bring in some, you know, break some boundaries here, you know.
Yes.
Do not play the song the same way twice. Tomorrow we'll play differently.
Yes.
Tomorrow we'll have a different interview.
Well, and that's what I love about listening, especially to jazz. You mentioned Miles Davis. I don't think he ever played a song the same way, ever.
And what, 250-plus albums.
Right. Yeah, you will never hear him play it the same way a second time. And it does. It gives you chills.
Exactly.
Because the brain power that takes to come up with a new way of approaching it every single time, it just, it's mind-boggling.
Yep. Exactly.
All right, we are at 15 past the hour.
Yay.
And if you just tuned in, we are here talking to the amazingly talented Daryl Rose here on Homegrown on WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. So we talked about your music. Now I want to talk about your new endeavor. I want to talk about your art.
Well,
so you have started painting.
Yeah.
And you have a show right now at the Jefferson School. And I wish you guys could be here because he brought art with him so we can look at it and be inspired. It's so awesome. So tell me how you got interested in painting. How did that come about?
Wow. In the year 1993, I was teaching a artist, Gloria Mitchell. At the time, I didn't know she would become my art teacher, but she was, you know, we were doing African drumming, and I was at her house one day, and she said, oh, have you ever tried to paint or draw? I said, well, I've had dreams about it. So she said, oh, let's go downstairs, and went to the studio. She laid a canvas out, colors, paints, and she said, now, pick some music, put some music on, and think about your music as you're working. So I just sit there, and I said, oh, And pretty soon, every Wednesday for a year, I kept visiting her and seeing her. And then at the end of a year, I was approached by someone to show art because someone had been to my house. One of my students had talked about what they had seen stacked behind a door, and they were wondering why it was stacked behind a door. And I was told that this should be seen by more than just me. So the first show was at Mud House in 1993. Through my mother's genealogical research, there is an ancestor who came by way of North Africa, through North African and French parentage, that migrated to Nova Scotia across America to New Orleans. This person is a painter, a great-great-grandfather painter. So it's time for it to come out. And that's the best I can explain it. A lot of paintings have been painted over the years, and they are in different places, and some are with me, some are downtown at Jefferson School right now. And I wish I could give it's like a back and forth routine of you balancing music, balancing art. Like now I'm sitting here with all my paintings. Now I'm getting re-inspired. I'm missing painting now after playing music.
So it's interesting that you mentioned that. So when I was in school for theater, one of the things that was said to us more than once was you should examine other artistic avenues.
Exactly.
You should go out and you should be seeing painting, you should be seeing sculptures, you should try doing different artistic avenues. You shouldn't just you should work this craft, but you shouldn't just work this craft. Do you find, or have you found, that delving into another branch of art How has that been like? Have the two branches spoken to each other at all? Or,
well, for instance, when I go to paint again, everything that we see in front of us, this is done. So we won't go back to this reference anymore. So I have to
right.
It has to be a new something, and there's a buildup of the thought process over weeks or days, etc., of what is going to be the mental picture. So when it's time to sit down, then you go for it. And when you go for it, so I have to be able to keep up physically.
It just comes.
You have to be able to keep up physically.
Yes.
Yeah. I didn't realize how much involved holding a paintbrush for 6 hours was until I've been doing it.
Yeah, you don't think about that being physically exhausting.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's like you're back and, it's giving, back and forth. It's a conversation within yourself, if that makes sense.
Okay. That makes
unto
that makes
thine own self
sense,
be
and
true.
It's really nicely expressed.
Yeah,
too.
Unto thine own self be true.
Indeed. So I know so little about painting, but I've heard painters talk about different types of paint, different bases of paint is as opposed to oil paint as opposed to water paint. Is there a particular type of paint you like? Go ahead.
Generally, is acrylics that I use, but I'll mix with acrylics, various alcohol substances like rubbing alcohol, canola oil, various things to bring out the richness in the painting. I'm holding something here which we can't see, radio, but this is like sand and aluminum foil, steel spirals. Cowrie shells from West Africa, but this painting is totally different than what we see in front of us. So
right. That's
the best I can give you that one.
I notice I want to say this once again. Your exhibit is up right now at the Jefferson School Heritage Center. And it's going to be up until December 31st.
Yep.
So people have time to go see it. And we certainly, certainly advocate that you go down and see this show. It's a small show, but it's really fun and it's really great.
It's 14 paintings. I think it's about 14.
Yeah, it's really nice. One thing I noticed looking at those 14 paintings is that you seem to enjoy a lot of texture.
Mm-hmm.
In your paintings, there is a third. I mean, they don't just sit flat on the canvas. There's a third dimension. In fact, frequently you've got little pieces of newspaper in them, like little something the cowrie shells, and so they actually come out.
This reproduction is like you mentioned that with the cowrie shells. for me, it's like we go back to not playing a song the same way twice. So, for instance, I can refer to a painting that I've done a month later, thereabouts, and I'll see something that I didn't see, and I'm the person that has come through. So that's how I try to. So in other words, I never get tired of looking at it. My teacher calls it, is it wall worthy?
Nice.
For me, that it speaks to me every day, and that can be right there. Okay.
Let me ask you: Do you think that there is a particular distance that you advocate speaking about it, about experiencing it on the wall? Because as I was looking at them, I mean, they're so layered, mm-hmm. and there's so much going on that I would stand close and look and see all these different things and all these different details, and I thought, okay, this is where I should be standing.
Yeah.
But then I would turn around and look at ones that were behind me and across the room, and having distance, suddenly they would gel,
yeah.
and it would become a different experience, and I would see things from far away that I didn't see up close.
Yep, I think that in this fast-paced world, perhaps we need to take more time to do exactly what you're talking about, even with people or circumstances or
nice.
Daily goings on. So the painting is kind of like that for me. In order for the painting to become wall worthy for me, it has to go through a very rigid set of rules to get past me to the wall that I'm happy with singing it there. Uh-huh. And then I usually have some children, my neighborhood children, will come in when I'm working, or they'll visit me on my studio, on my back, you know, my back sun porch, and I'll say, is this ready for the public? And they'll tell me yes or no if they like it or not. They just give me the truth. Not quite. Wow. Oh, we love that one. Don't you change that. You see, these are children that tell me this also. So I let them be my, you know, they give me the exact what I should have.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's amazing. That's interesting. A friend of mine put something up on my Facebook page, some saying where somebody said, drunks and children are the only people who always speak the truth.
That's a real well. Let me see.
So I also notice among your paintings, there's such energy and dynamism in them. And like I said, they're so layered. And yet, as I look at them, it seems like you have an affinity for geometric shapes. I wish you people could see them, and I thoroughly advocate going to see them, because it's not like they look geometric, but you look in there, and I wonder if it's like music, because like you see that there are little squares and there are little circles and there are little spheres and triangles throughout them, but at the same time, it's almost like they're the little notes.
Mm-hmm. It's like the overlay process. I often go refer back to Miles Davis within his compositions. I've heard on more than one occasion a composition within what you're hearing. If you allude to, if you can, if there's a the On the Corner is a recording he did, and it's a I think it's 5 or 6 CD box set, and you can hear from the onset of the music there's space, and then you hear composition, there's space, and then you hear something added. Then there's something else comes in, and all of a sudden you're hearing a duet between like a keyboard and a sleigh bell or something inside of the composition. That's the best way to describe that. And so with the paintings, I can go to whichever, for me, to see what we got, what do we have to talk about in the painting. You know, I can hold something and we can talk about this. Well, where is it all relevant?
The other thing I notice about that goes across all of your paintings, even when there aren't people present, there are eyes.
Yeah, the eyes.
There's eyes in every single one of them, and they're all different. Some of them you can readily recognize as mm-hmm. eyes, and other times it's like the shells on this person's face, but then in another painting there are people, but then there are eyes in other places
beyond that. Is there exactly
tell me what that means.
Well, I think that even if you're in the middle of the Mojave Desert, there's somebody always watching you. There's somebody watching. The eyes speak before the mouth does. From my experience,
yeah.
You know, the eyes are the window to the soul, often expressed. So for me, I can say, okay, I'm going to take this little box here. I'm going to put eyes on it. I don't plan it that way. It's like something speaks, and maybe the spirit or a conversation with me, myself, and I, to quote the band De La Soul. get that one right. So it's just some things are sketched and some aren't. There you go. Some paintings paint themselves, and I'm just there.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
No, I completely understand. I'm being a writer, that's sometimes how a story comes to me. Sometimes it comes to me and I plan it out, and then other times I just start writing and it just flows.
Exactly. There you go. There's a Sufi, Hazrat Inayat Khan, great Sufi master, and he coined the phrase the moment of centration, when the artist becomes the art and the art becomes the artist, etc., or vice versa. And so that when you, just what you mentioned, it just comes. So you're totally open to in the freedom within yourself also for that to happen. That's not that easy to do. That's not that easy to come out all the time.
No, it's not.
It's a whole nother place, yeah.
But I think something that a lot of artists struggle with is that when that happens, whatever we're doing, we have to stop.
Yeah, you
we have to stop, and we have to get to creating whatever we create.
Exactly.
Because it could go. It comes and goes, and we don't always know when it's going to come back or how long that inspiration is going to last.
I understand. I think that for me, I'm learning to step out of the ego out of the equation totally. That experience, to become a student of it. A student of yourself. I think that makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
Become a student with yourself, of yourself. Mm-hmm. Study yourself more. Pay attention to you, and you will pay attention to others also.
Well, Daryl, you have graced us this morning with your presence and with your
bless
words
your heart.
And with your arts. Thank you so much for coming in. I wish we could just keep this conversation going. And maybe we should have just planned the entire show around this.
We could have done it.
We could have done it.
A good time.
The show is called Daryl Rose, A Journey in Color. It's at the Jefferson School African American Heritage Center. It's already going on. It's going on until December 31st. Go down and check it out.
Thank you again for having me today. It's been a wonderful, wonderful morning for me. And everyone else in Charlottesville, have a happy, 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 happy Sunday. Thank you.
Indeed. Thank you. Thank you, Daryl. All right. It is 29 minutes past the hour. And we are here at 94.7 WPVC. If you're just tuning in, then unfortunately you missed a great, great interview with Daryl Rose on Homegrown, a show about local art. Speaking of local art, I think it's time to touch in and talk about some local art that you can go and see. Of course, running right now, as we just said, Daryl Rose, A Journey in Color, going until December 31st at the Jefferson School African American Heritage Center. Go check that out. Please, please do. Also, still playing now until December 13th, Honk. Honk the Musical at Four County Players. It's a show about the Ugly Duckling. Sounds like it's going to be a kid's show. And yeah, you could take your kids to it, but it's not just a kid's show. If that's something that turns you off, certainly check it out. Honk at Four County Players. Worth a visit. Also playing right now until January 10th at Live Arts. It's their main musical of their season, City of Angels. We just had Keisha Jarrett from Live Arts last week sitting on our show talking about it. The show's up and running. Please go and see it. And if you go see Daryl's show, or if you go see City of Angels, or if you go see Honk, any of the shows that are put out by the guests that we so graciously have on our show, then please go to our Facebook page, tell us about it. Tell us what you thought. Tell us how it moved you or how it didn't. Because here and tell us if we can read your comments on the air. We would love to, because here at Homegrown we don't believe in critics, but we do believe in audience. Today and tomorrow, Moon Over Buffalo auditions at Four County Players. It's a madcap comedy. They need 4 mature adult men and 4 mature adult women to bring this off. Go to the Four County website for more details and get your audition face on. Going from now also until December 13th, so much theater going on right now. The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe by Black Box Players. Go check that out. And just because, don't think that we only do theater here. December 8th, our man Brady Earnhardt, who came and talked about it, it's going to be this month's Uncovered at S Cafe. December 11th, so looking forward to this, Let There Be Light at PVCC. It's there for one night. It's a yearly thing that they do. It's going to be several artists doing exhibits about light. So great. Also, December 11th, apparently there's a carol sing at the Garage, that small venue at 250 North 1st Street. That sounds like fun. And if you're going to do other things to get your holiday stuff on, and why wouldn't you, December 12th, Ashlawn Opera giving you a Mall in the Night Visitors at the Paramount Theater. You can't get more holiday than that. You might as well just take your holiday and stuff it into a bowl of holly and just stir it around. And just stir it around. A Mall in the Night Visitors. December 17th, Big Blue Door has their holiday show at Seaville Coffee. So check that out and go online. If you don't know what Big Blue Door is, storytelling and improv, you can find them online and check them out. I've got to say something other than check them out, because I'm saying that a lot. December 18th, Seville Contra has a dance coming up. And speaking of dance, December 19th to 20th. So going on right now today, at the Paramount, is a version of the Nutcracker, which has just moved in and is performing today from out of town. Well, you can see that. You can. Or in addition to December 19th and 20th, you can see a local version of the Nutcracker, oh yeah, at PVCC, done by our very own Charlottesville Ballet. Yes, indeed. And so much music going on in this town. As we try to do, we're going to give you just a little bit, just a touch of it. December 9th, Jacob Paul Allen and the Ramblin' Sinners at Pro Renata Farm Brewery. December 9th, also, the John Spear Band at Heritage on Main. December 12th, singer-songwriter Jason Cooper breaks his exile from our local stage to go to Blue Moon Diner. Go to Seville Coffee. Jason Cooper at Seville Coffee to play his songs for you. And of course, every Wednesday, it's Jim Wave at Blue Moon Diner. Or if that's not your style, you can go and do some jazz every Wednesday. Mike Rosensky and Jeff Decker Quartet at Miller's. And the next night at Miller's, every Thursday, the John Dearth Quintet, because sometimes you just got to come down to Dearth. 34 minutes past the hour. You're listening to Homegrown, a show about local art on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. I think it's time to earn our radio stripes.
We just interviewed one of possibly the most amazing artists that we have here in Charlottesville, and you think we haven't earned our radio stripes?
Well, that interview was such a love fest. I'm afraid.
Right?
I'm concerned. I mean, it was so uplifting. It was so informative. It was so, dare I say it, almost spiritual.
Yes.
That I'm afraid people will be bored. Because we were told when we first pitched the show that we needed to have conflict. That's what.
Right. We need some back and forth, some angst.
Some angst, because that's what good radio was about. And we so desperately want to do good radio.
Desperately? Really? You had to use that word?
I will use that.
Okay.
Desperation is the armature on which I build so much. of what I do.
Okay. All right. So because we want to do good radio and we were told that it has to be conflict, what do we do about that, Clinton?
We have instituted in our show this moment what we call our friend-to-friend moment of conflict. Are you ready there, Leslie?
I am.
Okay. Leslie?
Yes, Clinton.
Did you clean the mics this morning?
No, I don't normally clean the mics because I'm not going to be like licking them or anything.
Then how can we get rid of these progressive talk germs? And that's our moment of conflict. Ooh, that feels like, feels like good radio.
That felt good to you?
Indeed. Let's move on to our next guest. Our next guest who couldn't make it live but allowed us to record her for your pleasure. It's 37 minutes past the hour, 94.7 WPVC. And are we ready there, Leslie? Let's go.
Our next guest is Ms. Morgan McCoy.
We have dead air. That's a little dead air.
Hello. Thank you all so much for having me on the show. And hello, listeners.
Oh, we're so happy you could join us. So, Morgan, you're doing a show on the 12th here in town.
I am.
And what's it called? What's it all about?
The show is entitled Evolution of a Black Girl from the Slave House to the White House.
That's a long time.
That is a long time. A very long time. We actually start the show in the 1400s in Africa, and we end present day in America's White House. And I portray 12 characters in the show.
Wow. Okay. So 12 different black women.
12 different black women.
Mm-hmm. And so how did you get the idea to do this?
You know, I've been acting for a while. I started acting professionally when I was 14, and I would do, you know, that part of how I got paid in high school is that people would ask me to portray Madam C.J. Walker, Coretta Scott King, and so that would be my thing. When I was 16, I would travel for Black History Month playing, you know, very black Coretta Scott King, Madam C.J. Walker, and so as I got older and, you know, still acting and doing film and TV work, people would say, you know, you look like Michelle Obama. And I would always say, yeah, I'm waiting on my Barack kind of thing. And,
You do kind of look like her. I just want you to know.
That's what everybody says. So I would always
say. So your response wasn't, wow, you mean all these strong, powerful black women don't look alike to you?
No, it was.
Well, there is always that, isn't
there? There is always that response. I didn't give that one. But
You were clearly much classier than I am.
I do think that we resemble a little bit, and I would love to portray her in their film. And so, you know, I said, well, one day I hope to play her. And a couple of people said, well, why don't you write a monologue about her or do a show about her? And they would have to pay attention to you to possibly cast you. And hence, you know, I said, well, maybe not a whole show just about Michelle Obama, but maybe how we got to where we are, hence the evolution of a black girl. And so that's kind of how it all started.
That's such a great thought, because mm-hmm. I was thinking about that before. I mean, just the idea of your show really started me thinking it's a really great progression mm-hmm. in not a long amount of time.
True. Very true. And that's, you know, as I started doing research and studying my ancestors, I was so inspired in looking at the sacrifices that they made, the strength that they had, the wisdom that they had, the intellect that they had. And, you know, despite all of these abilities, how, you know, they were treated because they were black and a woman. You know, and still today, you know, having the result of that, you know, of the racism. And so really getting a chance to portray these characters and tell their stories, because we don't know the details of their stories, in a comedic way, you know, where you'd have fun with the characters. You're laughing, you're singing, you're dancing with these characters, but you're also connecting with them and recognizing the rich history of African-American women.
So did you write this entire piece, or did you take it from writings that you had found of these women, or how did you construct the piece?
So there's a two-part answer. I always say that because this piece is so much bigger than me and bigger than my abilities, when I look at it and when people experience the show, I always say that God wrote it. He just used my hands, because I feel like it's so much bigger than Morgan's capabilities. However, I did in theory, I guess, it was me who, you know, I wrote the pieces. I was inspired by the Lord, inspired by the women as I read their stories. And a lot of, you know, as you watch the show, it will be excerpts of things that these women actually said. So you're getting a chance to hear their thoughts on certain things. And so, when I portray Rosa Parks, I did a whole lot of study about Rosa Parks. And it was amazing. One lady, she was about 80 years old, and she met Rosa Parks and knew her. And so after she came, she saw the show, she says, "You embodied Rosa, and I knew her, and I'm telling you that." And that, I think, is one of the most rewarding things.
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah. To actually have someone who knew her say that has got to feel great.
It was such a rewarding experience, and it almost made me cry. And I'm like, well, that's what I want. You know, as an artist, as an actor, you want to be authentic, you know, and so to be able to portray these characters and their stories authentically.
So how many characters again is it?
12 characters.
12 characters. And are they all based on actual people, or did you create any of the characters?
There are some fictional characters, but they're based on historic truth. So, for instance, as I was reading, you know, Billie Holiday's story, I was reading Josephine Baker's story. It was just so many. I wanted to portray
Josephine Baker. That's a fascinating story.
Yes, it is. It is such a fascinating story.
Is she one of the characters, or is she a composite?
She's a composite. Okay. So that's what I did. So I kind of, you know, compiled all of their stories and created a character that had a little bit of each of those women.
Yes, because that is an archetype inside the black
Absolutely.
Woman community. There
Absolutely.
There is that archetype of the entertainer.
Yes. Yes. And there's a whole lot to that, you know, because we see it even today, you know, how a lot of, and one of the lines in the show, I say, you know, how hard it is where you sing your heart out in a place you can't even sit in. You know, and to be escorted out of a cafeteria, you have enough money to buy, you know, what that looks like for them.
Sounds like a little Marian Anderson right there. That's what
that
sounds like.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, a little Marian Anderson and a little bit of Ella Fitzgerald, because the reason she got started, and I love this story, is that Marilyn Monroe saw her perform in an all-black club. And the reason she got to perform at the Cotton Club was because Marilyn said, "I want her to perform." Mm. And then after she performed, brought her down and made and let her sit at her table with her.
Really?
Wow.
Yes.
I didn't know
really?
That.
I had not heard that.
Me neither.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
I'd heard the story of when she first auditioned for Chick Webb's orchestra. Chick Webb said, "Great pipes," but talking about her looks, that is not going to stand up on my stage.
Yes. Wow. Yeah. And Marilyn heard her voice and was like, "I don't care."
Yeah.
She's amazing.
Yeah. 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 And there, I think we need to know their stories. And I feel like a lot of the artists now, you know, the singers that have made it, they need to know the history behind it as well.
Because if you listen to their music, obviously do not
know.
They don't know anything.
Yeah.
So seeing just how easy it is for the three of us to fall into stories, how did you possibly winnow them down to just, I mean, it must have been hard.
It was very hard. It was so hard. And every time I do the show, people always say, "We want more. Can it be more women?" You know, and so it really is.
You're just like, I'm one person.
I'm one person. 12 women is a lot already. You know, so it was very difficult. And so, of course, there's been so many African-American women that have contributed a great deal to our culture. So it's impossible for me to write one show which has everybody in it. And so it was a difficult process, but I did narrow it down because I wanted to. I kind of hit on major points, you know, throughout our history. And so to have a representative of every century, a representative of every type. So I have a character called the Educated Negro, you know, and so that's kind of, you know, shifting from 60s, 70s, trickling into 80s and 90s, and those who initially were the Angela Davis-esque type, you know, assimilating,
yes.
You know, and kind of forgetting where they came from. So I play that character, you know. I play some present day women and present day struggles. We deal with colorism. So there are various things that we're able to hit on. But of course, it's so much more. So maybe there'll be a part two one day. I don't know.
Yeah, it's hard to think about part two when you're not really done doing what you want to do with part one.
Yes, yes.
All right. Well, this is a pre-recorded interview, so I don't know how long we are after the hour. I haven't done that, that math yet.
Really? It's pre-recorded and you had to mention that?
Yes, I did, because we have to do the check. We have to say to our listeners that if you're listening to us now, you've tuned in to 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. You're listening to Homegrown, a show about local art, and we are so pleased to be here with our guest, Morgan McCoy, talking about her show, Evolution of a Black Girl, Black Girl. Evolution of a Black Girl, from the Slave House to the White House. How long have you been doing this show?
It'll be 3 years in February.
Wow. Okay, yes. So how many performances of this show have you done in 3 years?
Over 100. Probably 150.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, okay, so now we're going to get into the business side that, you know, Clinton and I are always interested in.
Oh, yes.
So, okay, so you wrote the show.
I wrote the show.
And you put it all together.
Produced the show.
Got it to a point where it's ready to go in front of people. How do you get spaces? How do you navigate that business side?
Yes.
To have 150 shows in 3 years.
Well, you know, I really feel like I'm blessed because my parents are business owners, and so even though I do not have an MBA, I feel like I've learned a great deal from them, you know, from seeing the ups and downs of business. And so they really helped me in the beginning, you know, as far as getting my incorporation and setting things up. I have my master's in film producing, and so I do know a lot about the business side of filmmaking and theater production. I have my undergrad in theater, and so at Hampton University, they really drilled in us the business aspect of it. And I met Blair Underwood a couple years ago, and he said, you have to remember that it's the entertainment business. It is a business. And so I really
such,
do.
Such a painful truth for
but
so
it's
many
true.
Artists.
Yes. And, you know, I'm an artist all the way. Like, I wish I'd never had to deal with budgets, taxes, any of this stuff. I don't want to deal with it. I just want to hire someone to take care of it. But, you know, I really do want to be wise, you know, and I'm grateful to have parents that were willing to consult me and they manage me. And I know that they have my best interests at heart. So I'm really grateful to them. But really what happened with Evolution of Black Girl, I finished the show. My mother was on me like, Morgan, you're always acting in other projects, but you have some writing skills. You need to do this. And I said, oh, I'm going to do it. And then finally, one day, I just like, you know what? I'm going to do it. And so like 2 months, I'm writing, researching, compiling things. And I finished writing it. And my mother sent a massive email out to everybody in her database saying, Morgan has this wonderful show, Evolution of a Black Girl. And we got a hit. One hit, you know, I had no clue what was going to happen with the show. I just was like, let me just be obedient and write it. And so I performed the show and people came to me crying. I performed the show at the Kingdom Pursuers Church, which is now the church I attend, but I wasn't attending the church at the time. And they came to me crying like, this ministered to me. But there happened to be a school teacher there. There happened to be professors there. And so as a result of that, from that one show, I booked 5 shows. From that 5 shows, I booked 10 shows. From those 10 shows, and it just kind of, without any marketing, the first year I'd done about 50 shows just from word of mouth.
So is this your first show in Charlottesville?
It's my first Evolution of a Black Girl show, but not my first show, because I have 3 one-woman shows now.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So it started with Evolution of a Black Girl. I now have a show called She's Got Issues, which I performed in Charlottesville, and that deals with human trafficking, domestic violence, sexual abuse, a lot of women's rights issues, and bringing healing to those areas.
Well, you're the second artist that we've had on our show to talk about art in the service of raising consciousness for human trafficking.
Yes. You know, I believe that art definitely dictates to a culture, and you can bring some things to life and to light by showcasing it on the stage. And
yes.
So, you know, for me, that really is a big passion of mine.
Yes, I completely agree with you. And I've done that for the past few years with my own stuff. So,
yes, it's a powerful medium.
So let me ask you this. When I was growing up, I was always told that one of the aspects of African-American art specifically is that not only did it have an entertainment component, but it was also had an educative performance.
Absolutely.
That one thing about African-American artists usually is not only do we want to make you feel good, but we also have a message that we're trying to get or something. I wonder if that's still the case. And I wonder if you think that that's, okay.
I know it's the case for me. Unfortunately, I don't think it's the case for every artist. I do believe that there are some artists that are very, very much aware of the platform that they have with their art, and they are respectful of that platform, and they care about the influence that they're making and educating people. Unfortunately, you have a lot of artists that are really focused on just making theirs, their money. You know, it's about, you know, that crab mentality. I'm going to get mine, you get yours, you figure it out. But I try not to focus as much on those that aren't doing and just try to make sure that I'm the one that is doing, you know, because I can't control anybody else. I just can control myself.
Exactly. So. Exactly. And hopefully if more of us have that attitude of wanting to be a positive force within our community, that it will trickle down to the other ones and they'll get on board.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, here's a challenging thought, I wonder if that development isn't indicative of more positive developments. Mm-hmm. That is to say, I wonder if one of the reasons why African-American art so long had such an educative aspect of it is because we had to.
Yeah.
Right? We had this stuff that we had to say.
And all of the ways we told our stories, it was all oral history.
Right.
So it made sense to do it that way.
Yeah.
Right. So here's the question. Have we finally gotten to a place where we don't need to? Like, has progress had this negative effect where, well, actually now we don't have to be so mm-hmm. proselytizing. Now we don't have to hit our history so much. Now we don't have to give out a message so much.
Well, go ahead, Morgan. I'll let you answer it first, and then I'll answer it.
I think that there is a misconception that we have that we've, quote unquote, arrived, and because we've arrived, we don't.
Which isn't what I said, but I think you're right.
I think that because of that misconception, there's a thought, what you had said, you know, because I think that we don't need this anymore. You know, because we have arrived, so it's not necessary to tell the story as much. It's not, you know, I do shows, you know, in high schools, and there are students that don't know who Rosa Parks are, you know, and so.
Ouch. There's something in me just died.
Yeah. So.
Well, and I think what has happened is once we stopped doing that oral history, once there was not a big mama in the house that mm-hmm. sat, that had the children around her and she told stories. Mm-hmm. Once that stopped, then we somehow forgot that we needed it.
Yeah.
And when we forgot we needed it, we grasped for whatever was around us. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, the grasp we made was to the huge media mm-hmm. that's out there, and we started listening to that instead of listening to ourselves.
Right. And I think that's why I really encourage, especially individuals that are, you know, in the arts, to really become content creators, because we often talk about the media, oh, how we're portrayed in the media and all this stuff. But, you know, the media is just a tool, you know, so it can be used to accurately portray you or to inaccurately portray you. And so we just need to be the film producers. We need to be the screenwriters. We need to be the television producers on TV stations. That's what we need to focus in, and challenging individuals to not just come into the studio and rap a song, but how about you own the studio? Inspiring.
You own the studio, you write the rap, you write the music, and you rap it yourself.
Absolutely.
Yeah, do that.
So that's what I try to encourage people. And I really, you know, I want to share, you know, I know because one of the questions was about the business aspect, but I really was blessed. Mr. Lou Gossett Jr. Came on board to help me because I actually, one of the other entities that I went through in order to get opportunities with the show, I went to a conference called AFCA, which is an opportunity for artists to showcase for colleges. And when I went there, I didn't know how I was going to do, you know, this was not a HBCU conference. This is every school. And I didn't know how they were going to take the show, even though I know the show can help you, whether you're a black girl or Asian boy. It doesn't really matter. It's a universal story. And so I did this 10 minutes of the show, and I booked 30 shows. I kind of like broke the record. 30 colleges booked the show. And Mr. Gossett has a a foundation called Eracism, and the concept is erasing racism in our nation by creating content that brings awareness. And so I bring him up because I think if we had more people like him, you know, who have arrived, who have made it, to reach back out and help younger artists and show them the way, then we would have, our world would be a better place. I do believe that.
Well, and I would add is that I don't think we have to wait until we arrive to do that.
True.
I really think that the only way that that is going to become part of what we do is if we do it from the start. Even if we haven't arrived, we
Very
still
true.
Need to reach back and say, hey, are you interested in this? Mm-hmm. I'm doing this. Why don't you come help me?
Let me show you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just like you guys did by letting me be on the show today.
We're all about the love, aren't we, Glenton?
Speak for yourself. I'm just in it for the money. I'm here to get my, you know, because I think this radio show certainly is going to be the thing that
this is going to do it for you.
Oh yeah,
it's going to propel you into a new stratosphere, and then you're not going to know me.
I'm thinking the roles pretty soon. You know,
oh, really?
<It's>
gonna... That's awesome.
You can tell the strength of my business.
Well, you heard it here first, everybody. I mean, once Clinton gets that phone call, he is gone.
There you go.
He will not know any of us. Well, Morgan, tell everybody exactly when and where the show is here in town.
Yes, the show is December 12th, 6 p.m. at City Space. Come one, come all. We're so excited. 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. For ticket information, contact Pilgrim Baptist Church. They're actually sponsoring the show. And the number is 434-296-3577. Tickets are just $20, and it is a smaller space, so you definitely, I know after probably about 100, 150, we won't be able to let anybody else in. So you're probably going to want to call to get your tickets. So.
Get your tickets now.
Get them now. Yes. And if you have any, you know, if you want to see clips of the show, go to my website, evolutionofablackgirl.com. And if you missed, you know, you're driving down, you didn't get a chance to write down the number, on my website, it'll have all the information about the show December 12th.
Look at her. She's so put together. She got a website and like all her, she got flyers and all this stuff. She like straight.
Was there a moment when you were saying, oh, please don't let somebody have taken evolutionofablackgirl.com?
No, because I did it immediately.
You just jumped right on
it. Right on it. So that was kind of like before I did the show, before I performed it, I had the website and got my incorporation.
That's
stuff.
Smart. That's very, very smart.
Yeah. She is a smart woman. She is a smart black woman.
Oh, thank you, Leslie.
And I am happy to know her.
I'm happy to know you guys as well.
So what type of venues have you been performing this at?
Theaters, colleges, churches, high schools, detention centers, rehabilitation centers. We've been conferences, going all over. Where there's a space, we will be there and we'll do it.
Okay, so my only other question is, okay, so you're playing 12 characters.
Yes.
And I've seen the video.
Yes.
There are costume changes.
There are.
You know, I was wondering, like, ask that question.
How do you do that? Because not just costume changes. There are hair changes.
Major hair changes. Yeah, so it's a lot of fun. You should see me back there. I do 30-second quick changes. So what happens is, you know, and I've been doing this show for a minute, so I kind of got the feel for
She's got it down.
You know, but so we have, I have a screen that's set up. So we set the stage up, and then the screen is a part of the stage. And so we have music for the era that you're about to experience. So within that 30 seconds, the audience is prepared with the music, and I'm making a change, but they don't have enough time to really realize what's happening.
Look at her.
A little bit of stagecraft.
Yes,
there you go.
A little bit of stagecraft. Yes.
It's all with lights and mirrors, people. Lights and mirrors. It's magic.
So, listening to you talk about the history of doing the show, one of the thing that really strikes me and seems quite clear is that the show strikes other people, that this mm-hmm. is material that's really inspired, that's really touched a lot of people.
It has.
And inspired a lot of people to reach out to you.
Yes.
Is that the reaction that you've had to the show? I mean,
yeah, you know, the show changed my life. I'm not trying to be funny. It changed my life because, you know, I was, you know, brought up where, you know, you want things fast. We're the microwave generation. You want it now. When it doesn't happen, you're frustrated, you know. But as I was reading Maggie Walker's story, you know, and I researched Madam C.J. Walker and being an orphan and not being able to read, yet, you know, working her way up to her millionaire status, you know, I just was like, you know what, Morgan, I don't have much to complain about. And so what the show did for me, it made me appreciate those that were before me and also gave me the realization of for the necessity of patience and hard work and diligence. And so I became better as a result of the show. That's why the theme is getting better every day. You know, so they, you know, although they're no longer here, you know, their stories impacted me. And so I said, well, if they impacted me, let's see if they'll impact someone else. And they did. And so everybody that sees the show, you know, every time I do it, people come up and say how they were changed. So that's the goal.
That's awesome. That's really awesome. Thank you so much for coming to talk to us about
the
show, Morgan.
Thank you guys for having me.
And one more time, give the date.
Yes. Saturday, December 12th, the City Space. The address for City Space is 100 5th Street, Charlottesville, Virginia. Tickets are $20. Sponsored by Pilgrim Baptist Church. Ticket information, 434-296-3577.
Thank you, Pilgrim Baptist Church. Thank you, Morgan.
Thank you all. Thank you so much.
Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. Every day.
All right. Well, we have gone a little bit over time, so I am not going to have time to do my rant today.
What? No rant?
There's no rant. And Clinton's, he's normally mad about the rant. Now he's mad that we don't have time to do it. I can't win. You guys have a great week. Don't forget to check out Evolution of a Black Girl and Daryl Rose's exhibit at Jefferson School. Coming up is Rick Moore. You feel me if you live it, and if you live it, you don't finish it out of gimmick.